I'm Tom Bowles. I'm a freelance press photographer. I work a lot with politics and general news and got dragged into the protest world, photographing it over the last 3 or 4 years, I think, since Extinction Rebellion sort of really kicked off. And as a freelancer, I choose what I want to do. So while the main agencies didn't start covering Just Stop Oil because there was so much of it, I had the choice to go along or not, and I decided I would go along because it was publishing occasionally.
So how did you get into doing press photography? I mean, I've done a little bit myself over the years, and I noticed that you sort of, I mean, in some occasions, there aren't any actual real journalists there writing stuff, that the camera people and the photographers can sometimes be the only ones there. Certainly, you know, sometimes on the front line of a protest, for example.
Yeah, so I got into press photography through a slightly weird route. I did 20 years of doing classical music, playing classical music in orchestras around the world, and then decided I didn't enjoy it. And I always had my camera with me and was always photographing. So I ended up photographing opera and ballet. And then from that, got a press card, found myself in Downing Street, and then into the sort of like the hard news end of things. And yeah, we're often at the front line of protests, and the journalists sort of pick up our footage and write a story from it occasionally. Yeah, because it makes in pictures, sort of, you know, a picture and some video footage really does sort of tell the scene of what's going on, often better than a written journalist. I can't say that.
Well, look, what about Extinction Rebellion? You sounds like you've been covering quite a lot of those over the years. What have you? Can you tell us any tales of some of those events? Because things do happen. You know, sometimes you get the police dancing along with the protesters. Other times, caving their heads in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a sort of a firm supporter of the police because, you know, when the shit hits the fan, you need to have somebody there that you can phone, and it would generally be the police. And so the sort of the stories of the police sort of taking a knee or bending over backwards for the protesters, I've sort of not really seen it. I mean, there are some ridiculous situations, I personally think, where they are not, where they, you know, they should drag them off the road or they should do something, but they tend to police in the way that they're supposed to. The Extinction Rebellion stuff, when that started across London, was quite interesting because it was the first of the sort of intelligent protests where the protesters would inform the police what they were going to be doing. And because they were within the law in what they were doing, the police weren't actually able to stop it. And it created quite an interesting atmosphere in London where it was very peaceful. There was just people were milling around and you could walk around between various different protests that were happening.
Well, hang on, because that wasn't surely that was the norm most of the time. I mean, say, for example, with the farmers protest this week, there is an arrangement made with the police. The police are stood around, but they don't necessarily weigh in unless there's trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. But the protests that the Extinction Rebellion were doing were actual, rather than gatherings, they were designed to cause disruption. So, you know, they stopped a hearse on Trafalgar Square, and at the same time they built I don't know what it was, some kind of a box somewhere else on Parliament Square, and then they blocked the bridges, and this all happened in a very quick succession, and it was all within the law, or within the sort of the rules of the law, I suppose. It was bizarre, but it was the first time the police had actually, I think it felt like it was the first time the police had been presented with mass disruption in that way, that was sort of organized and clever, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, it's designed to block streets, etc. It's not designed just to be a protest in its own right, you know, or one particular lobby appearing. The idea is we are just going to block the streets and tough the police. You're just going to have to get used to it. But yes. But what about this, I think it's in 2022, you were photographing the Just Stop Oil, which is really a part of Extinction Rebellion, it seems. Maybe you could say something about that. But blocking motorways, I mean, this is starting to up the ante a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. So Just Stop Oil, they are, I mean, they're separate, very separate from Extinction Rebellion. They're I covered maybe 150 of their protests, and they were doing slow marches. They were pushing the boundaries of what the police could police by just sort of chasing the way protests could happen. So Suella Braverman would bring in a new law to say protesters aren't allowed to glue themselves to stuff, and then they'd say, okay, we won't glue ourselves to stuff, we'll just walk. And the whole time they were keeping one step ahead of the police. They massively upped the ante by announcing that they were going to, this was like a year after they'd started their protests, they upped the ante by saying that they were going to block the M25 by climbing on the gantries. They announced that it was going to happen. They told people to stay away from the M25 because the M25 would be shut down. And this, I mean, whether I agree with it or not, I mean, I think it's crazy, but it's what they were doing. So I went along. I the way I worked with them is I'd be given a what three words and a time, a what three words location, and I would just turn up, and then something may happen or something may not happen. So I turned up to cover the M25, and it's holding the protesters to account and holding the police to account and the public to account. So you're just reporting on what's going on. And the so the protesters did their bit, climbed on the gantry, and I shot it as I normally do and filed it off camera to the papers.
Sorry, can you just paint the picture a bit? Whereabouts are the protesters? Where are you on the M25? You're clearly not in the central reservation or something.
No. So I mean, I'm not. Some people will follow the protesters in areas that they shouldn't go, and I'm not. I don't want to put myself in any kind of risk, so I'm not. I was on a bridge, a footbridge, a road that crosses the M25. In Hertfordshire, and a single protester sort of climbed up the gantry, which was, you know, about 50 feet away or 100 feet away from where I was, climbed across it and opened a banner. So I was photographing it from above, looking slightly down, and I'd been there for it was like 10 o'clock when it happened. I'd been there since 7 o'clock, so I was wet, cold, pretty grumpy, because it also wasn't a great vantage point. And so I knew I wasn't going to sell so many pictures from it. This action happened it was a coordinated action across the whole of the M25. So I was watching on various news reports and newspapers about the actions that were happening elsewhere on the M25. They all coordinated to happen about 9 o'clock. Ours ran a bit late for some strange reason. So I was sat there watching better stuff coming in, going, what a nightmare. You know, I'm stood in the wrong place. You know, I was stood in my arranged place, but it wasn't great. And then as the police turned up, that's where it gets a bit more interesting. So they turned up, drove along the motorway after the traffic had been stopped. And so I was photographing them.
Maybe we should say something about this kind of situation when you've got somebody on a gantry above. Now, this is, I suppose, equivalent to when you get a jumper, you know, a potential suicide, where the police have to stop all the traffic quite naturally in order to make sure this person is brought down quietly and safely. Effectively, that's the sort of thing that Extinction Rebellion are instigating here. Just Stop Oil. And so the police really are obligated that they have to, just in case there is any possibility of this person falling, even though they're not obviously there to kill themselves. But so they have to stop the traffic. They really do.
Absolutely. Yeah. So their job is to keep the peace and keep the public safe and stuff. And so what will happen is there will be reports. Drivers will report that stuff has happened. They know that it's going to happen. They just don't know exactly where. The police don't know where because they're not given the exact information. So they're expecting it. There were hundreds of police sort of driving around Hertfordshire that morning. You know, it was just, they would have been driving around everywhere. And they were arresting people and stopping protesters on their way. So this lot got through. And as soon as they're up on the gantry, they have to stop the motor, close the motorway, and then they have to get specialist teams to get them down from the gantry.
So that's a whole nother point. You just sort of a little bombshell there. So the police are actually arresting people who they believe may be on their way to a protest.
Yeah, because the laws have been changed. So, I don't know how many protesters were arrested because that is... The preemptive arrest of protesters isn't my, it's not my bag. I'm not there for that. But I know that there were cars that had been stopped. And as I was driving around, I was driving around at 6 o'clock in the morning, being aware that police are there. And I'm also, I've covered so many protests that I'm sort of known as being at the, I've got a relationship with the police. They know that I'm there as a journalist. I've talked to, we stood there for a long time chatting about stuff. So I'm not.
So would they ever stop you thinking maybe you were part of it if you had the information about where to go to?
I mainly deal with the Met Police. So in central London and in London, and they know, the police know who I am and because, And they'll, we'll chat about it. But I'm not giving away my sources about how I know about stuff. Their job is to find out about stuff in the same way that my job is to find out about stuff. So if I can get somewhere to find out, to cover it, and I've got a source that tells me about something that may be happening, that's my journalistic sort of...
Yeah, it's a bit of cat and mouse, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Really. And if they find out about it beforehand... And I turn up and the police have cleared the area beforehand, then that's bad for me because I don't get to sell a story. But it's, the police have won that game. And that's kind of part of it. That's the police are trying to stop the protesters causing mass disruption, which I think is fair enough. Yeah, I think it's fair enough.
Okay, so but this is Hertfordshire Police, I imagine. Is it up there?
So Hertfordshire Police, they weren't so used to it. But also, politically, I think that the PCC, so the Police Chiefs Council for Hertfordshire, was recorded on LBC sort of saying, we need to come down hard on these protesters. We need to arrest them first and ask questions later, because an LBC reporter was arrested. Long and the short of it, I was arrested whilst photographing the protest unlawfully. And there's
so what happened? Were you trying to take pictures and suddenly the police appeared behind you, or what happened?
I photographed them on the carriageway, and I could, because all traffic has stopped, it's very quiet and peaceful, and I could hear the officer saying to the policeman, detained those two. There was a filmmaker who was up on the bridge with me at the same time, who happened to be there at the same time. We weren't together. And I heard the police officer point at us two and say, detain those two. And I thought, it's a bit odd. So carried on taking pictures.
Okay, maybe at this point, sorry to stop you telling the tale, but okay. Can you just explain, is it an agency you're filing to, a picture desk? How are you getting the pictures from your camera to the press?
Well, I send them to the, I'm sending these ones to a small agency called Story Picture Agency, who I worked with a bit, but I send them straight from the camera to either the picture desk or a small agency. So as the police arrive, I've pre-captioned the images, so a protest, and then I can update it on my phone, so I can say, you know, police arrive at scene of Hertfordshire Justice Hall, you know.
But is this going straight from your camera out on sort of through the mobile data network?
Yes. So straight from my camera, straight to a picture desk or an agency. So it takes a matter of seconds to get there. So it's immediate. It's immediate news. That sort of immediate news is now, you know, the rolling news is really important. The Daily Mail are the biggest users of content or for immediate news. And then from that, then you'll get the Sun using some bits, the Times, the Telegraph, and then it works its way down, the Mirror, the Express. They'll have online content as well that they'll take from freelance journalists at a push. You know, they like to have it from an agency because it's cheaper, but they will take it from freelance journalists who have something that's exclusive, basically.
Anyway, so sorry to go off on a tangent, but you've just got the police walking towards you and you overheard them saying, detain those two.
Yeah, which is not the usual sort of thing that I expect to hear. You know, it might be find out what those two are doing, go and speak to those two, something like that. But so as the police officer walked towards me, because he had to walk up the embankment and then along the bridge, I said, good morning, officer, in the way that I always do. Whilst still taking pictures, and while I'm taking pictures, I'm also filing, so I don't have to look at the back of the camera. I can send them from the viewfinder, basically. And he just said, secure your camera, which was a bizarre statement. Didn't say anything else. Secure your camera, secure your camera. And I said, what's that? And then he grabbed my arm and put a handcuff on it. And I was slightly shocked because I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm very, very definitely within the law with what I'm doing. And I'm quite happy to have a conversation with the police officer and show him my press card. And I'm quite happy to explain why I'm there. But I don't expect to be put in handcuffs.
No, I would have thought at the very least that they should do is to explain to you that you have to stop doing what you're doing, or, you know, that's extraordinary. So how did it go from there? He's saying secure the camera. He's worried that if he handcuffs you, the camera's just going to drop to the ground or something.
Yeah, I mean, I was being a bit sort of pedantic, you know, but no one has ever said to me, secure my camera before. And it's like, prepare yourself for the worst. And it was like, you know, you could say, hello, what are you doing? You know what I'm doing. It's sort of like, you know, you could say, are you a member of the press? I could say, yes, I'm a member of the press. Here's my press card. And there's all sorts of, you know, I'm used to interacting with the police, and I know what, you know, a standard way of doing it is just grabbing, you know, just before you say anything to anybody, putting a handcuff on them is not right. Because a police officer is supposed to make an assessment of the situation themselves. Is there a risk? Is there this? Is there that? And I was just handcuffed, and then handcuffed with two hands. And then I was like, what are you doing? So pretty upset about it, but assuming that a senior officer would come up and just say, what the hell are you doing? Undo him, let him go. What the hell do you think you're doing? This is a nightmare. You can't be doing that. And that didn't happen. A senior officer didn't turn up. So this went on for like 15 minutes of me being in handcuffs, them, you know, every time they took a handcuff off for me to put a camera around my neck or something, another officer would hold my arm. So I had two officers holding on to me. And I'm like, this is, you know, I'm not running away. I've got no interest in running away. I've talked to you about this, but what on earth are you doing? And then they handcuffed me, bundled me, handcuffs behind my back, and then put me in a police van and drove me to Stevenage police station.
So right. Did they at any point explain to you what you've been arrested for?
Yeah, eventually it was a good few minutes in. He came up, he realised that he hadn't read me my rights. And he came up and he said, "You're being arrested for suspicion to cause public nuisance," which I think it was a new law that had just been brought in. So they weren't quite sure about it.
Well, it sounds like they're experimenting a bit. Well, what about your super camera? Because you've still got it in your hands before they've taken it off you, or that you've secured it or put it in your bag or whatever.
Yeah.
Are you still able to take photographs or what? When you had the handcuffs on?
Yeah, they're saying, I got the camera around my neck and then I said, "I'll put it down." You know, they said, "Put your camera down." I said, "Okay, we need to," you know, because of the way I had it, the strap was handcuffed as well. So they had to unhandcuff me so that I could then put the camera down. So they unhandcuffed me. I held the camera in a hand. I was taking pictures while I was doing it. And they were saying, "Stop taking pictures, stop taking pictures." And I was saying, "I'm terribly sorry. It's an accident. Really sorry, sorry, sorry." But whilst taking pictures, filing them off to the agency as well, because they would have seen what had happened, because they would have seen the police turn up and then they would have seen no pictures coming from me.
So what were these pictures actually of?
They were of the protester on the gantry with the police underneath. You know, I have to say I was quite pleased with them. They were quite well framed and everything.
You couldn't have been looking through the viewfinder. You got handcuffs, surely.
And no, I wasn't looking through the viewfinder. It was it was coming up on the back of the camera, so I could sort of see. But they were quite nice pictures. I wish I'd got more of the police officer, but it was me having my, you know, I was really, I felt I was going to have to be really calm about this, because I felt incredibly cross and I've got a tendency to sort of swear and shout and stuff. So I thought, I can't be swearing and shouting because that will give them more reason. So I was really calm about it all, knowing that they were wrong. They asked for proof of ID when they arrested me. And I was kind of aware, I'd been chatting to other colleagues about this. The police had upped their ante. Suella Braverman had been sort of really upping the ante about protesters. So we were aware that it was changing. The police were going to be arresting more people. So we were aware that there was a heightened risk of being spoken to by the police. So I had my press card separate from all of my other ID and my wallet and everything. I had it separate so that if they asked for ID, I had my press card to give them, nothing else. Because that just proves who you are. There's a number on the back where they can check that you're a verified news gatherer. And so when I got taken into custody and into the custody suite, and the sergeant, you know, they take your shoes from you, your shoelaces, your belt, everything. And they went, okay, we're going to, these are the items you've given us, a wallet, cameras, computer, backpack, you know. And I went, and my press card, because the press card was separate. And he went, "No, that's just wallet and cards." And I said, "No, it's a press card. It needs to be, you need to say that you have taken my press card, because I'm press. And if you just say wallet and cards, then, you know, I'm Joe Public. I could be a protester or whatever." I didn't say that to him, but that's what I was inferring. And he refused. He wouldn't say that it was a press card. So I refused to sign it. And I insisted on speaking to another custody sergeant who came across. And this went on for 10, 15 minutes of me refusing to sign the items they'd taken.
Yeah, because I mean, it sounds like that's the first opportunity you've had to actually show it. So this is a bit of evidence.
The chap that arrested me asked for ID, and I gave him my press card when I was arrested. He was holding it on his body cam footage. You can see it all the way through. It's just your standard press card with that is sort of verified, proper UKPCG press card. So, yeah, eventually they agreed to put a line in saying my press card, and then I signed it, and then they took me to a cell. Or whatever it's called.
Okay, so did you get a chance to have some sort of legal representation at that point? How long were you in for?
I got a duty solicitor who was fantastic, who was absolutely baffled at why I was being held. And I was held for 14 and a half hours, and they interviewed me under caution. And during the interview, when I was talking to the, after 14 hours, I heard from the duty solicitor that they'd searched my house as well, which I was just so angry about, because my wife and my daughter were here and it was 11 o'clock at night and stuff. So it's just sort of absolutely unbelievable. It's the sort of stuff you read about that they get very upset about when it happens in China or in Russia. You don't expect it in Hertfordshire.
So how did your family react to that?
My wife is brilliant, and she just she'd spoken to colleagues of mine who sort of knew what was happening, and she'd tracked my phone to see that I was in a police station and kind of put two and two together. And so when the police arrived, she said, I assume you're here, you're here because of this. And they said, yes, we can search your house under Section 18. And then they were asking where I worked. And my wife said, well, he sits, on the sofa, at the kitchen table, everywhere. And then they walked around the house, went through some things, and then ended up taking my daughter's iPad, thinking that's how I'd communicated, because they were just trying to find out how I knew about the protests, and to sort of scare me a bit.
Well, look, this is raising all sorts of civil liberties issues. First of all, I suppose, the two main ones probably are, it'd be interesting to see what you think. Is first of all interfering with the press just in a general fashion, but then effectively what they're doing here is they're stopping stop your photographs actually making it into the papers. It's an attempt to to try to pretend to the public in a way that this has never happened. That seems to be the object.
Yeah, that's what they were trying to do. So the interesting thing is it's not sort of a general police thing across the board. And this specific case was really interesting because you knew, like, Just Up Board said they were doing actions in Essex, Kent, the Met, Surrey, Hertfordshire, and probably somewhere else, I don't know. So you could see how other police forces reacted and how they reacted to the press. So Essex, Kent, Surrey, and the Met didn't make any arrests. They dealt with the press perfectly, the way that police are supposed to deal with the press. Hertfordshire were the only one that made arrests. So it wasn't, you could say, it was an officer that didn't know what he was doing, but four journalists were arrested in separate locations. So the briefing that went out beforehand was there to sort of, I think there must have been a briefing that said, make arrests first so that we can send out a memo that says we arrested four people at the scene or at various scenes. And then 2 hours later, we arrested the protesters from the gantry.
So you weren't the only one. Have you been in touch with other journalists who were arrested? What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke afterwards. It was all very the filmmaker Rick was arrested next to me, and I ended up giving him a lift home when we were released because the police were, we were just dumped in the middle of nowhere. So, we weren't just dumped in. Potentially it felt like we were dumped in the middle of nowhere, but I gave him a lift home, so I talked to him. I'd seen him at other protests, but we hadn't really chatted much. And then Charlotte Lynch, who is a journalist for LBC was arrested elsewhere, and another photographer was arrested as well. And I spoke to them afterwards, and we'd all sort of suffered quite a lot, but we all also had to take legal action against the police because of it, separate legal actions, because it's, again, you know, human rights, civil liberties, loss of earnings, stress, all of that stuff.
So was it, I mean, what do people do in this sort of situation? Is it something simple as wrongful arrest or false imprisonment, something like that?
Well, yeah, so I obviously, you know, like all of us, we don't know because we're not expecting it. So the photographer's community was great. I got a phone call from someone who was had been dealt, you know, badly by the police and was suing them. And he phoned up straight away. I had like hundreds of phone calls straight away. And he phoned up and said, I'm using this firm of solicitors. They deal with police misconduct. So I'd recommend them. So it was a company called Bat Murphy. So I phoned up Bat Murphy and said, would you represent me? This is what's happened. And on my way to my first meeting with them, I had a phone call from an unknown number, and it happened to be the chief constable of Hertfordshire Police, making a full apology to me about what had happened. This was a few days after the arrest, and he made this full apology, and at the end of it I said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you, the phone's broken up, I don't know who it is, you'll have to phone back in half an hour, and I hung up because I wasn't prepared to have an important phone call like that out of the blue when I'm walking along. You know, if you're a person in that much power, you arrange, you know, I couldn't just phone him up and ask a question, and I didn't expect that he should just feel that he could phone me up out of the blue.
No, it sounds like he's trying to butter you up.
Yeah, but he wasn't expecting me to do that, obviously. And then I just walked straight into the lawyers, and the first meeting I had with Molly Cox, my lawyer, was hi, the phone's going to go, it's going to be the chief constable of Hertfordshire Police making a full apology. And she said, no, that's what we're aiming for. And I said, no, he's I've just hung up on him. He's going to phone back. And he phoned up and she took notes and she said, that's never happened before. Because I hadn't employed her, I didn't let him know that she was there. She just took notes on the on it. And I sort of said, you know, we need to have a meeting afterwards. We need to, you know, you need to make sure your police are trained properly so that this doesn't happen again. I don't accept this apology as like the end of it. You know, I appreciate you making the time to phone me, but I've gone through hell. So,
and yeah. You know, it's also, of course, your family as well. So how did the legal action go?
Legal action is, so part of the reason that it's crossed your radar is the legal action has just finished. So this is 2 years after the effect. The legal action has gone as it should do. My daughter, we all had to take separate actions against the Chief Constable of Hertfordshire Police for their actions. And they've all been settled. We've had a full written apology, which we were which was one of the main things. It's the most difficult thing to get from the police, is a full apology. But we got that. So there was financial, compensation for what we've been through as well, and costs. So part of my costs, I unexpectedly had a sort of a big mental breakdown, which I wasn't expecting at all, because I've not had anything like that before, and just sort of completely couldn't do anything, and ended up sort of having to be pieced back together over a few weeks. I had sort of PTSD from it, which I wasn't expecting, and serious headaches, and just, it was just like stuff that you don't expect when you're just, you know, you go out to take some pictures in the morning and then you find yourself sort of in custody. And the police were saying that they, you know, they were saying that my press card wasn't valid because, and that I was basically, it was a fake press card, which it wasn't. So we ended up with, I ended up, you know, I had broken teeth because of I was grinding my teeth, which I've never done before, and covering another protest, and all of a sudden my tooth just broke. And that was associated, you know, the dentist who had seen me a few weeks before had said your teeth were fine. For it to break with a clean break like that is purely stress. Are you in a stressful situation? And it was just, it was pretty horrendous, to be honest.
I think, having your home violated, something like that, your loved ones treated like criminals. I mean, that's the sort of thing which, there is something positive to say about all this, it seems to me, though, Tom, is the community of photographers out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's astonishing. You just see this sort of press pack outside, like Cummings House or, you know, somewhere where it looks like everyone's pushing to try and get the best shot. But actually, it's, we all know each other. We see each other at a gallery or at Downing Street or in a protest or at a riot, be it far right or far left or anything, you know, whatever it is. We see the same people day in, day out. And the support that is there and the knowledge, because you've got people of all ages and people that have seen it all. So it was really, really, you know, it's a very supportive community, even though I'm sort of like an independent freelancer. It was good, yeah.
Are there any tips you've got for photographers who haven't gone through this sort of experience? If you'd already had that experience, and it happened again, what would you say to them? How is it possible to prepare for something like this? And what should be going through your mind when the police approach you, obviously, out to arrest you, stop your footage or your pictures getting to press?
There are some really basic things, because the police are trying to get information from you about why you're there. That's basically it. They know that you're not an aggressor. I think, you know, if you've got a camera around your neck, you're not really likely to be an aggressor, but they want information. Most of us keep all of our information on our phone. I had the opportunity to make a phone call to somebody, but I didn't know their telephone number. So, and they said, okay, well, give us the pin to your phone and we'll, you know, then you can get their number. And I said, can't you Google it? And they were like, no, give us the pin for your phone. So I said, I won't make a phone call. So as a really, like, the one basic thing is just make sure that you've got a telephone number of somebody who you can give the information to and say that this is what's happened, and can they make representation for you to the NUJ, the BPPA, the BMJ, whatever it is. So that's what I would, you know, just having a telephone number that you can use. Not having that was sort of genuinely scary. Because it was just sort of...
I mean, I think it's worth saying for anyone who isn't, full-time or earning most of their money through press photography, even if you're doing it on a sort of amateur basis, you can still join these various associations, unions, etc., on a sort of associate membership where it is, you know, you still have benefits of things like that, whereas maybe you're not a full member, you're a sort of halfway member. So it is, you know, don't be put off joining one of these organizations just because this is something you're doing in your spare time as an amateur.
Yeah, I mean, my only caveat to that would be covering an awful lot of protests, particularly the like when the anti-vax protests were happening, there was a contingent of aggressive citizen journalists. Now, as a full-time press photographer, and the people I know who do the same job, we sort of have to make sure that we are doing things properly, and keeping within the law and keeping within, basically, it's not really, I think, that there are, you know, as a news gatherer, there are certain things that you would do and you wouldn't do. You wouldn't, you know, obstructing the police, doing those things, shout, you know, I wouldn't scream and shout in a police officer's face. But I have seen it from other people. So, yeah, I mean, having a telephone number is useful. I don't think the BPPA or, you know, I don't think any of those people can actually action things straight away, but you just need to have a person that you can speak to who can sort of basically pass your story on.
Your thing is your phone, you would have had to put your PIN into it anyway to phone that number, wouldn't you?
No, but you can make a telephone, you can make a call. The police offer you a phone call. This was when I was in custody.
Ah, oh, right, I see. Yeah, okay.
And so it's at that stage I didn't have a telephone number to give them. I just think having a little card that you carry alongside your press card that would say, you know, that you can write on your telephone, you know, the telephone number of either your, you know, either the agency that you work for or a colleague who you could say, I've been arrested, please help. And also just the police's conditions are. So police aren't allowed to access your phone, aren't allowed to access your images on your camera if you're a member of the press, unless they have a court order that's been signed off. And that's section one, I think. I can't remember the section, but that's the thing I think should be written on this little card with your number. So you can show it to the police and say, you know, here you go, sign it off by a court, and then you can have, you know, you can access my details, my property, the images. That's what I would do to prepare in future. There isn't really anything else that you can do. If someone decides to arrest you, all you can do is sort of stay as calm as you can and hope like hell that you can get a duty solicitor that understands what's going on, and hope like hell that you can be released when you should be, and as quickly as possible, and hope like hell that you can then follow it up with decent legal advice from a very, very good solicitor and barrister.
So is there anything you can do to sort of prepare for the psychological stuff? This obviously came to you like a bolt out of the blue.
I don't know about that. I know that the Oilers and various other people do sort of courses in preparation for being arrested because they're going out to be arrested. I wasn't going out to be arrested. I don't think people should prepare for being arrested, and I think people will react differently. I'm not in any position to sort of suggest it. I was just so angry while I was being held, and they were saying things like, you know, do you want us to dim the light, because I had just an incredibly bad headache. They had to get a nurse out because of my headache, and she said to me, in the police cell, she said, oh, your blood pressure's really high. And I was like, of course my blood pressure's really high, you're holding me like against my will. And she said, you need to see a doctor. And I was like, well, how am I going to see a doctor, you know, you're holding me. So they were trying to do stuff to sort of be helpful, and it was like, what on earth are you doing trying to be helpful? So I was probably not helping myself much by being angry and wound up, but you're in a little...
Oh, that sounds hot. It's like toxic positivity, yeah.
Yeah, and I was in a little room with a metal toilet and a sign up that says all water is drinkable, thinking, fuck that, it's disgusting, you know, no. And just thinking, what on earth is going on?
Okay, Tom, well look, if people are interested in sort of following this up, maybe there are photographers listening or people who are just interested in the civil liberties aspect, is there any way people can follow you or follow these cases of these other journalists?
I'll send you links to the, you know, the information that was up there. My Instagram is Tom Bowles Photo, and I'm quite happy for people to contact me, and I can send out links to it, and you can pop up the links to the sort of the press release from the lawyers. I mean, basically the outcome is that everything was sorted, and, you know, we're sort of back to normal, and I'm still out going and photographing protests, and still sort of enjoying it.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the most extraordinary things is that body cam footage from the police. Did that take a long time to get that off of them? Because that's well worth a watch if people want to.
All of that stuff was dealt with by the lawyers. The lawyers were, you know, you give them the information, they sort of, it's like a tick box. So, you know, the compensation is, did they hold you for this amount of time? Did they, you know, everything that they did has a monetary value. It's not a massive monetary value. It's not like the States. If it was the States, it would have been millions. But I probably may have been shot. So, you know, I'll weigh up the pros and cons.
Was it easy to get hold of that? Oh. How long did it take? I mean, it's 2 years since it happened. So,
yeah, the footage, we got the footage. There was a lot of going backwards and forwards about footage because I wanted the desk sergeant's footage as well, where I insisted on a press card because they, because I think that's the bit that I felt was a little bit sinister because they knew the press, usually the custody sergeant is the last bastion of, you know, they're the ones that say, what on earth are you doing arresting a member of the press, to the copper? And they aren't prepared to take over that prisoner or that whatever it's called, detainee, whatever it is, if there's anything wrong about what's going on. So the fact that they were denying my existence as a member of the press was I thought absolutely shocking, and that's the footage that I really wanted, but they didn't have that. So yeah, it took us a bunch of months to get the footage across. I didn't release it until everything has been signed off, ticked, and I've got a letter from the lawyer saying, you know, thanks very much, hopefully I'll never have to speak to you again, which is why the 2 year point where everything has been settled, that's why I put the footage out a bit.
Finally, has it changed your attitude to the state, the police?
No, I still, if I was up shit creek, I would definitely be phoning the police. I would advise people to do that. You know, I think the power of that, the previous government, and particularly Suella Braverman, trying to sort of, rather than engaging in discussion and de-escalating, that idea that we will just go in and roughshod over everything and arrest and stop protest and arrest, I think is deeply damaging. I can understand the frustration of the police and the government, because the protesters were one step ahead of them, which was, you know, I found it quite amusing that they were always one step ahead of them. But for a government and for a police force, it must be soul destroying.
Okay, Tom, you could just finally remind us of your socials again.
It's Tom Bowles Photo is my Instagram, and I think Blue Sky, is that the new one? I think I'm Tom Bowles on that. And yeah, I'm not Parker Bowles. I'm not Camilla Parker's son.
Right, no, thank God. All right, okay, Tom Bowles, thanks very much for joining us. Fascinating tale.
Thank you.